You've been dealing with the Blockade Australia legal issues after the blockade in Sydney, and I was wondering if you could give us some information about how things have been working out.
Oh, well, slowly to date, but there's a lot of cases. We've got 10 people who were arrested at Colo, which was where the protesters were camping on the outskirts of Sydney, totally legally camping, I might add, when they were descended, or they rather discovered, a surveillance team hiding in the bushes, filming them. We're not satisfied yet that team had a proper warrants to do so. But nevertheless, the protesters then surrounded these intruders, as I think they were certainly justified in doing. And but they've been since charged with assault police for surrounding those officers who didn't say they were police officers, and affray, which is a very serious charge, 10 years jail. All of those 10 were kept in custody at least for one night. Some of them, I think, approached the second night. They're going to be very messy and long cases. We're entered pleas for them. That's as much as we've got. We're waiting for police evidence. So they are very serious charges. They're 5 years jail, assault police, 10 years jail, affray. All I can say is I'm fairly confident we can beat those charges if we get a fair hearing. The other matters, there's some 25 or 22 that we're handling. I think there's about another four handled by other people who protested on the streets of Sydney and are facing the new legislation in New South Wales, which makes it an offence to be on a road in Sydney, or certain roads in Sydney, of 2 years jail. It's unique. There's nothing like it in Australia. There's nothing like it in the darkest days of the Jockey Peterson era, that we had a road offence, which is a mere traffic offence, making you vulnerable to 2 years in jail. So we're acting for 22 people who are possibly facing 2 years in jail for daring to make what turned out to be a fairly non-intrusive protest on the streets of Sydney against or to highlight climate change.
If we go back to Kohler, are you dealing with the case of Tim and Max, who were actually gathered up and put into jail for an extended period of time?
Yes, actually for both of them. They were denied bail, incredibly, in my view. Mind you, it's not difficult to get people detained in a bail setting because you're not allowed to argue the facts. The magistrate is given the facts, and they have to accept them. They're given the facts by the police. And on the facts given to them by police, Max and Tim apparently participated in this assault upon police and this affray. So, as I say, they're very serious charges. So the magistrate, quite well, rightly, I suppose, went, well, these are very serious charges. And the police were opposing their release. These are dangerous men. They're part of this evil Blockade Australia, causing mayhem or threatening mayhem to Sydney, and now they've assaulted police. Well, we believe the evidence, the actual evidence on the assault police, is extremely poor. And yet these poor guys had to sit in jail for 3 weeks because they were denied bail initially before we could get back to court and present some of the evidence that has come to light since then, which would suggest that the offences were not so serious at all. Now, the point of that being, if they are convicted of those offences, which I believe there's a poor chance of them being convicted, they would probably not be sentenced to jail. That is, it would be at the very lower end of that offence. So if they're not to be sentenced to jail, how can you keep them in jail for 6 months before their matter would be heard? And obviously the court agreed with us and they were released. But both of them, young guys, no criminal record, no history of violence, just nice, ordinary people sitting in Silverwater jail for 3 weeks because a surveillance team crept up on them on private property in the bush. and they asked, had the temerity to ask who they were, and then tried to stop them getting into their car to escape.
I don't know if you can comment on this, but is this an extremely worrying development that the police are being used as a political weapon, it would appear?
Well, a political weapon or not, there's certainly something very intense about the policing. Now, obviously, police, there's laws. Okay, there's a new law. I think it's an offensive law. I think it's an absurd law, but it's a law. So the police are entitled to, or not entitled, they're in fact obliged to investigate any breaches of that law. That's, well, it's not the police's fault, is it? It's the politician's fault to bring in something that was a $400 fine previously, that is to obstruct traffic, was a $400 fine. Now it's 2 years jail. Obstruct traffic, 2 years jail. So, all right, that's on the police books. But police have certain discretions as to what they charge and how they charge. Now, in this case, they've set up a strike force, which is a dedicated police unit, a strike force against Blockade Australia and these protesters. Strike forces were initially set up for, you know, biking gangs running, you know, heroin importation. So when you have a strike force, it's a group with enhanced powers and enhanced resources, or in fact, almost limitless resources. They have dedicated around-the-clock teams who are to surveil and to prosecute, more or less, at any opportunity for any offence. That's how you deal with bikies. You want to get bikies out of your town, you set up a strike force. You follow them 24 hours. You book them every, you know, wrong left turn, every failed, indicator light. You keep harassing them. You keep bringing them to court, and then if they do a major offence, obviously you get them for that as well. But it's not, strike forces really aren't about major offences. They're about harassing and intimidating criminals. Well, in this case, they're harassing and intimidating, and in my view, over policing environmentalists who have committed no offence against the person, who have not damaged any property. Undoubtedly, I guess they're trying to be inconvenient. They're trying to create inconvenience, undoubtedly. I mean, they're saying they are. But does that mean you have a strike force that is there to, you know, make their life not just miserable, but bring them within the criminal justice system? I think it's improper.
It's interesting too that in the Cola incident, for example, it was noted by Blockade Australia or the people there that the police actually broke all the windows of all the cars, even the ones they could actually access because they had keys. So that sort of gives you the impression that the police themselves were acting illegally.
Well, illegally or not, we'll see, I guess. There may be civil actions that come out of that. But what's happened is, there's 30 or 40 people that are camping at Colo, which is a, you know, rural thing along the river outside of Sydney. When they come in to rescue their surveillance team. Now, the incident was well and truly over when they after that, and they arrested 10 people. The others were told to leave the property. They then went in and basically pulled all the tents apart. And they smashed the windows of the cars. Now, what are they looking for, right? They've taken everybody's mobile phones. Now, you normally do this when you're after forensic evidence. There's a drug bust, for instance. Okay, you pull apart the panels of the car. What are you searching for when what you're saying is there's been an assault upon police or police operations have been interfered with, they say. What are you searching for when you're pulling down tents of people who haven't been charged, when you're breaking into the cars of people who haven't been charged? Well, you might be able to do it under the police regulations. They're given pretty extreme powers now, almost limitless powers to do such things. But what's the forensic purpose? Why are you doing it? Other than to create, you know, distress and inconvenience. The people, all those phones, all those computers taken, I mean, no one gets them back. Oh, you'll get them back at the end of the prosecution. Well, what are you hoping to find? This is a very contained event. It's not a pre-planned event that might be, there might be evidence of such, you know, on phones or computers, you know, they're planning this operation. In my mind, it's absurd, and it's doing nothing but trying to aggravate and inconvenience, and it is succeeding.
Yeah, and limit effectiveness. The also the side issue to this, of course, is that it diverts attention from the fact that we're dealing with a climate emergency, and also that Australia potentially should really consider having a charter of rights.
Well, I think I disagree with you on the first thing. Ironically, it's not diverting attention from a climate emergency. I think, ironically, it's actually bringing attention to the climate emergency. Mate, perhaps the Blockade Australia's got more publicity than it could ever have dreamt at. I mean, at the cost, personal cost of some of those people. But if it's to sort of suppress information about Blockade Australia, I think it's been a complete failure. More attention than would have been given to what was not a particularly impactful protest through the streets of Sydney. As to your second point, well, yes, that's a bigger question. Australians, I think, are very vulnerable on the question of rights. We're a strange position amongst the liberal democracies. America has a constitution which protects their rights, and we're all familiar with it. In fact, most of us, a lot of my clients think it applies here. We all have this idea that we have a right to silence and a right to not be searched and, you know, various rights that we all think we have, but as it turns out, we don't have them. But America has a constitution. The British have very elaborate common law rights that are protected by the conventions of English law. We used to have them. We've abandoned them at great haste. I don't know what protections Australians do have anymore. I think we've got very few actual protections. I mean, we are a liberal democracy, so we have certain conventions that protect us, but those conventions, I think, are rapidly disappearing, and there's not much you can do about it, not much to stop it. There's not many courts you can get into to say this is an infringement of some right when there's some little two-bit piece of legislation that was passed at midnight, you know, last week. That's what applies. That's what applies. Whatever the parliament, you know, rushes through in a moment of anger or, you know, a thought bubble. Our statute books are full of thought bubbles now. Whatever the shock jocks are upset about that week, it turns into legislation pretty quickly these days. And that's what we're facing with. That's absolutely what we're facing with this very poorly thought out roads legislation.
Yeah, it's pretty it's interesting because you're right, people have this idea that there's a certain level of natural justice that is in existent, but that's not what you can take to court.
Well, you can't take it to court. You used to be able to take it to court. I mean, like the Evidence Act, you know, was based purely on the common law, then common law being you know, principles, broad principles of law, and that were defined by the courts, by the precedent of different court judgments, you know. Well, now, since they've sort of codified the Evidence Act, that is, just put it into one big book, well, it's very easy to change the book. It used to be very hard to change principles rapidly, right? It would take a number of major court decisions and some sort of rule of evidence would change over time. Now, it's a flick of a finger and some angry new, you know, local MP wants something, and now it's in the Evidence Act, or now it's in a new piece of legislation. Open up the Evidence Act one day, open up the Criminal Code. I mean, they just keep adding. It never stops. They keep adding. And when I say adding, what they keep doing is removing what was once defences to accusations by the state or by police. You know, we used to have defences. Well, every time there's a defence raised, now they're whipping it into Parliament and taking the defence away. So I find it horrifying.
Yeah, it is horrifying. The Blockade Australia people who are waiting for their cases, and it could take ages, I presume, because that's the nature of the beast, are they banned from things? Are there bans on them?
Yeah, very severe restrictions. So we're hoping to, you know, chip away at these, but to get them out of police custody, because they were all denied police bail. Police arrest people all the time, but then they charge you. They tag you. Well, you've got to be in court in a month's time, and here's the paperwork. They don't often say, we're going to detain you, and we believe you should be detained permanently, which is what they do with all of them. They denied them police bail. They kept them in jail all day and all night and begrudgingly got them to court the next day. And then at court, they were going to oppose their release, saying they should be kept in jail. These people are so bad. They should be kept in jail until their matter can be heard. If you enter a not guilty plea, your matter's not going to be heard for 6 months. They should be kept in jail. There's the New South Wales Police Force asking for this. Well, so each of them then had to apply for bail or accept police bail. So the conditions on all of them are as high as I've ever seen. They're the type of conditions you might expect, you know, if you were to release a repeat sex offender, if you're not going to incarcerate them, but you're going to release them. It's the sort of conditions you put on them. That is, some of them had complete home arrest. Complete home arrest. For what? What did they do? Oh, they were going to slow down some traffic. You know? Others have curfews. All of them, or almost all of them, had these non-association orders, which again, are unusual things. I do a lot of criminal stuff. You know, I've got major drug dealers who don't get non-association orders on their bail. Bail is when you're maintaining your innocence, or generally maintaining your innocence. You're entitled to be seen that way. Bail is meant to just ensure you come to court. Non-associations, 22, 25 non-associations. Well, that's, for most of us, that's all of our friends. And it certainly is the case with these protesters. They're friends. You know, they're lovers of some of them. Non-association. You can't talk. You can't see each other. You can't email. You can't text. You can't, you know, like. And if you do, you'll have breached bail, of course, meaning we'll come and grab you again and put you back in the cells and we'll say that you should be kept in prison. So non-association orders, limitations on you can't use encrypted devices, that is, you can't use any messaging service. You're limited to one phone and the police have that number and have the code of the phone. Police can come to your house up to some people, up to seven, one guy had up to six visits a day to your home to check you there. Extreme, right? And we also know that a good number of them are being, the ones that aren't under curfew, are being surveilled. That is, physically surveilled, with undercover police following them around. Some of them are banned from New South Wales. Who do you ban from the state? You'd have to be a pretty serious criminal to be banned from the state. But, you know, nine of them are banned from New South Wales. Nearly all of them are banned from the city of Sydney.
There's a huge amount of money going into the police in order to finance this. Obviously, it makes it look like the fossil fuel, that the government is in the pocket of the fossil fuel industry.
Well, who knows? But there's clearly it would be fair to assume there is a political. People often say, and I don't share it, right? I certainly don't believe the courts are in anyone's pockets. Fortunately, we have very independent courts. I think police overall just get on with their job and do their job. But when it comes to resources, that's a political decision, right? It's not random that suddenly one unit looking at a group of environmental protesters are given the resources of, you know, probably 10 police stations. That's a political decision. So someone is saying, spend whatever you need to spend, employ whoever you need to employ every device you possibly can. That's not just local cops or any level of a police command going, this is what we'll spend our money on now. That's has a tint, a flavour to it that I find objectionable. It's clearly an allocation of resources. And in a state like a city like Sydney, which has some pretty serious crime going on in it, I would think it's questionable as to whether it's a good use of those resources.
No, not to mention the health issues and the public pay disputes that are going on at the moment.
Well, I guess it's not their business, but you know, for a police department or for a police force, it's got limited resources.
I
How
mean,
does it spend it?
the government.
Yeah,
Thank you very
yeah,
much
yeah.
for spending some time with me. I appreciate it.
No worries.